Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Sunday, that means it's time for another episode of Burning Down the House. We are burning down the house. In our conversations about design, architecture, and the creative arts. Today, I want to speak with architects Duo Dickinson, who will be joining us through the wonder of telecommunication on his way back from Seattle, and also in studio, Jacob Allspector of AllspectorArchitecture.com. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great.
Is Duo with us?
And the City College of New York.
Yes, professor, doctor. Topics for today.
Duo's with us.
Thank you. Hey, where are you?
I am in New Haven, Connecticut.
Excellent. Good place to be. The topics that I want to talk about with both of you, you haven't met Jake, I don't believe. So we have Jake and Duo. Jake is he was the number three guy at Gwathmey Siegel for 25 or more years. Now he has his own shop. The topics I'd like to examine.
How are you, Duo?
I am good.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
In the first half, I'd like to talk about education and expectations. Education of our incoming class of architects, we hope. And in the second half, I want to talk about once you have an education and then you become licensed or don't become licensed, all of the aspects that aggregate to the state of licensure in terms of implied social contract. Now, that's a lot to mull over. I understand, Duo, that you've just come back from Seattle. Is that correct?
Yeah, literally just flew back in from a series of events regarding my latest book. But actually, one of the more interesting events as it relates to this conversation is I met with a terrific architect named John DeForest, and we presented at a Boston AIA event and also at a conference called Reinvention this year. A way we think architects can relate better to clients and to builders and to the whole process of creating built objects that are artful with the human interaction versus with confrontation and ignorance. And we are trying to figure out a way to inject that into the academic bloodstream. And so that was another reason I went to Seattle, was to see John.
Well, I hope that in a future episode we can get John hooked in through a phone conversation and either have you here in the studio or also you by phone, because I think both you and John. Is John one of the participants in the Congress of Residential?
Very, very much so. He helped found the Seattle chapter, which is extremely active, and he did undergrad at Yale, and I think he went to Harvard GSD and has impeccable credentials, and it has a thriving residential practice in Seattle, and it, in a way, his success and perhaps my success really, I think, underscore the fact that if you do it right, there's a market for what architects can offer, that this is not a death sentence.
We can only hope. Well, so I'm going to give you and Jake a little bit of time to think about education as it's received, education that's been delivered to the kids who come and look to us for jobs And then after that, in the second half, we're going to talk about implied social contract. In honor of your Facebook post, we're going to have a little teen spirit.
Load up on guns, bring your friends. It's fun to lose and to pretend. She's overboard, myself for sure. I know a dirty word. Hello, 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 hello. With the lights out, it's less dangerous. Here we are now. Entertain us. I feel stupid and contagious.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information. And be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Curtis, can I just quickly say there's something kind of fun about Patti Smith singing I Feel Stupid.
And contagious. And contagious.
Sure.
All right, from the Northwest, home of grunge, to the Northeast, home of Patti Smith, we've made the transition. And I guess, Duo, you survived that.
Yep, it survived to United Airlines.
I want to know who provided the limo for you, man. That is so cool. See, Duo and I are Facebook friends, and
it was a 1%er.
There was a little phone thrown at me from the people hosting this building conference that they had, which is great.
How terrific! Did you flog your book at Powell's Books in Seattle? That's like powerhouse.
We tried to get into Powell's, and we ended up at a Barnes & Noble, so I guess I didn't make the high bar.
Well, but you made an appearance in Seattle, and there'll be buzz, and you just never know.
You never know.
Excellent. Well, that's great. I think that what you're doing, for those of you who are recent adherents to the Burning Down the House tribe, Duo writes. He's not just a guy who designs buildings, but he's also written a whole lot of stuff. We just can't keep him from putting pen to paper or electronics into the ether. And his most recent book, Staying Put, has done very well.
It's in its second printing already.
I'm really pleased for you. I really am pleased for you. But now, you didn't learn all that stuff in architecture school. You learned that through practice. So let's talk about the received notions that we have of what architecture school should be and what we're seeing in terms of the kiddies who come to us looking for jobs. Jake, you and Duo, you both have a lot better take on that than I, because it's been 12 years or more since I had my own independent practice. What's your feeling about the preparedness of recent graduates for employment?
I think it depends on which schools you're talking about, and, you know, like anyone else, the people you're interviewing. I don't interview enough to say that they're really great or bad. I kind of like learn of people, or, you know, get recommended and stuff.
Would you hire your own graduates from CCNY?
Certain ones, sure. Yeah. I actually have two CCNY students, alums right now working, two women.
Wow.
And I had a guy.
I'm going to let the fact that they're both women go by.
Well, actually, we have three other guys, too, a young guy and two more experienced guys.
Do you think that the young women are actually better students these days?
You know, I would say that the students have different skills than how we were taught. So
that sounds so political.
A whole different way of approaching the world. But if you're in the architecture project, it can make you focus. So I think if you do, you know,
so you think
work,
women, you
your
think,
process, the process,
you think
the,
women
the making.
You think women focus better?
No, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't. I couldn't agree.
Duo, your turn.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, we've got all different tribes and genders and everything out here in Connecticut. And we also have, you know, people that went to Yale and people went to the Boston Architecture Center and people that went to Roger Williams. So you've got a melange of, you know, RISD and all the rest of it, art school, Ivy League school, you know, professional kind of school for people that work during the day. And they're all quite different. But in the sort of weird world of quirky residential stuff, what I do find refreshing is that every once in a while somebody has the kind of depth of intelligence combined with humility to be willing to learn. And I think part of the generational issue is that being a boomer parent myself, raising children that you want to have healthy egos and good self-esteem, is that, you know, they can be very intelligent, but they're not always very humble, and they're not really used to having to learn after they've spent, you know, about $200,000 in a five-year architecture program in theory learning stuff. And so it's a rare occasion where you've got the sort of intensity of desire to learn with the intellectual background to sort of accept new knowledge, and then also just the technical facility to be organized and to use the technological tools that are there. And I've got an extraordinary young woman working for me now who I think is going to be a great architect, probably with her own firm at some time. And I've got a wonderful 45-year-old guy who has his own sort of side practice, which I encourage people that work for me to have. And they're just people that would do this out of the fire of the belly. And my take is, having receiving at least a resume a week and sometimes five resumes a week, is that the schools, while a recent record a survey indicated that 85% of students in architecture school think it's a good value, and 89% think that it is a effective preparation for future professional practice. I think when they hit the streets, what I get from talking to a lot of people is that they really get a lot of cold water thrown on them, not just during a recession, but even when times were good, they go into an office and they realize that they were not taught by people that really knew how buildings went together or how a professional practice was organized. And they felt in some ways that although they learned how to design empirically and in a fine art sense, they really didn't understand how kind of cutthroat, intense, no holds barred, flexible kind of push the profession is. It's not a circumspect.
How old were these
talk
people?
About aesthetic profession, you know.
How old were these people?
Uniformly in their 20s.
Right.
I think you just, I mean, you've been practiced a long time, so we all know it takes years and years to learn your craft, and we still learn because things change. So the question is one of education, what you do in a formalized setting of education, assuming, and the reason there's education is because there's licensure. Prior to that, it was apprenticeship, which is exactly what you're talking about, where you teach some novice and you kick them in the butt and you say stupid or whatever. And now, this is the old sort of cliched way.
Well, that's the old way.
That is the old way under which actually we were somewhat trained.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the new way
The new way is a little different.
Well, the new way is, unfortunately, because post-secondary education is so expensive, you would think that once you've spent, as you say, Duo, $200,000 for an MArch degree, that you should pretty much know everything. But it's really, in some cases, not much better than an industrial vocational education, high school sort of education of the 1950s in terms of being able to be useful in an architectural practice.
Well, what I see happening is maybe even darker than that, and this is a strange phenomenon. And in my blog Saved by Design, I wrote a piece called The New Dilettantes, and I do think, to be honest, that what has emerged, and you know, I used to teach a fair amount. I was actually a design professor at Roger Williams University, and I taught undergrads at Yale at Yale College, and their non-professional, you know, undergraduate major. And I've been on juries and all over the place. And, you know, it becomes fewer and fewer juries because I build more and more. And there seems to be a toxic relationship developing between those that build and those that teach. And
yeah,
when you look back to mid-century modernism, you had people like Louis Kahn and Charles Moore and Paul Rudolph and on and on and on. The great builders were also the great deans. And if now, if you think about it, well, you know, Robert Stern does build, that's good. But if you think about the other great deans of great schools of architecture, those people don't celebrate building. They celebrate fine arts education. And what ends up happening more and more is you have a class of professors who build out of necessity to maintain some vague sense of street cred as an architect. Maybe have passed the licensing exam, maybe not.
But you know, I hate to be a relativist here, but it really depends on the school that you're talking about.
You're totally correct. I mean, something like New York Tech is exactly the opposite. Roger Williams is the opposite.
And then there are places, I think, like the place I teach, Spitzer School at City College, that's really in between. I think we have a very good program. We just went through an accreditation.
Okay, guys.
And they didn't even blink.
Yeah.
But we have very well-rounded students. I think that's the key,
I
think you can't learn it all in 5 years. So
no,
the question is to learn gradually and comprehensively what you learn.
I think the point here is the distinction that Duo's just made about those who build and teach and those who never build and teach. And it's a slippery proposition that, unfortunately,
well, that's about academia.
Hold on. I want to put this out. I want to take a little musical break of a couple minutes and come back and revisit this. Unfortunately for you and me, the slippery people started with John Haydick, our dean, who never built anything until way late in his career.
Well,
let's take a little break.
That's a low cut, man.
Cut the mics. We'll come back in 2.5.
Wow.
Peace.
That was those would have been architect and design people from RISD, the Talking Heads, with Slippery People.
I have to thank God they never became architects, because I think they're the ass kickingest band on the planet. There's nobody better than them.
All right. Well, obviously, they understood that the choice between doing paper architecture, because in the early and middle 1970s...
By the way, you left it, and I have to respond to where you left it. Okay? How's that?
I left it at...
You left that John, never John, built, and that's not true. He actually practiced for quite a few years before he taught. And then he renovated Cooper Union in a very most excellent and durable way. Okay?
Jake Allspector is talking about the late dean of the Channon School of Architecture at Cooper Union.
And I disagree about the function of drawing architecture, especially when architects are out of work. What are they going to do? They're going to dream, just like architects today dream about different things.
And then the let's just do paper architecture became let's just do computational formalistic architecture, which then unfortunately ended up getting built when certain other people bullshitted their way into convincing people that these unrealistic things that they had formalistically done, it didn't matter whether it was paper or if it was a computational form, which had no relationship to the reality of people using a building, got built. Now it's Duo's turn.
What's really interesting to me is this: the fact that no one could, in their right mind, would ever begin to think that you shouldn't start out and have as the core through all your years in architecture school. Design is the fundamental course that you have, and the design abstraction in school is the only way to learn, and that's a really important part of it. It is a central part of how you train your brain to think spatially and formally. But the thing which is missing, the thing which I think is going missing more and more, despite good programs that we're hearing about, is that there tends to be a suspicion that if you focus too much on the real world, in some way that actually dilute the quality of a building as opposed to enriching the quality of a building.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude that ends up pervading the work that I see from students that come out of very good schools like Syracuse and other places that send me work all the time. And you get the cool oddball kid who just wants to build something, and that person is just lights your fire because of their fire. But that's not what's encouraged at many of the more academically oriented schools of architecture. It just isn't. It's trending away.
Well, at GSD, Harvard Graduate School of Design, I could argue that the implied social contract between an architectural education and society at large is broken down because the guy who is running the program refuses to be licensed. He designs buildings, and he has no license. And when that happens,
who's that?
Preston Scott Cohen. And
well, you'll have to sick the Massachusetts board after him, Curtis.
Well, he's designing buildings that are built in other countries, where it is understood that if you have a degree in architecture, then it's okay to call yourself an architect. The United States, because perhaps we're...
Well, the course of study is different too, right?
Well, in other countries, the course of study is different.
And licensure.
Yeah. A course of study in architecture in Spain is many years longer, and the final exam is equivalent to our RARE, Architects Registration Exam. But getting a degree in the United States is not equivalent to passing the ARE.
Well, you know what shocked me, gentlemen? What shocked me when I saw this architecture record survey that came out last year, what shocked me was they had a fairly broad base of schools and students. 85% of the people that are in architecture school right now are intending to take the licensing exam.
Wow.
And And what that shocked me. And secondarily, I did a little bit of crude math, which I think you could say is full of baloney, and maybe or maybe not. There are at least 250,000 human beings on the planet which have a professional architecture degree. They were graduating close to 6,000 of them now. There's another 1,500 that graduate every year with degrees that are paraprofessional, like degrees in environmental science or a BFA in architecture. But there are, you know, they're basically 3,500 masters and 2,500 B arches being given every year.
Wait. In the United States.
Exactly.
And a quarter of a million worldwide, you're saying?
Just the United States. And so it ends up, so you then have 100,000, 104,000 humans right now that are licensed architects in America. Well, you sort of do the math, you realize that, you know, one out of two people that go to law school end up passing the bar. And like 95% of people that go to medical school end up passing their boards.
Yeah.
Realize that we are maybe one out of three. And if you think about all those other degrees that are piled on there, we may be like more like one out of five people end up being licensed that have gone through this entire educational process, even though 85% have the intention of being licensed. And I have to believe, gentlemen, that that's because when they get out in the field and they have to do the internship, they say, you know what? I didn't know from school that this is what the profession is like. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, I never knew that you had to sit for hours and hours doing programming about what do you really need in your space, because programming is not taught in an architectural school. You learn that in practice, just for example. And that could be mind-numbing. I spent 4 weeks working with the people at St. Raphael's in New Haven. You've probably been up there or past there.
Oh, yeah, that, in their master plan, long involved attenuated process.
Yeah, and I was involved in expansion of the master plan in 1981, 82, 83. And, you know, I met with every department and all the head docs, and it was a great educational experience for me to learn what the docs needed, but it had nothing to do with the design-oriented education that I had received through either a baccalaureate or a master's degree, and nothing had prepared me for it. I just was lucky enough to be able to be a good listener, and being a good listener means being able to ask questions that might possibly impinge upon a design resolution. My education had nothing to do with that, but that was a huge, big part of being able to begin to do planning for St. Rafe's. And
well, I think you're describing what duo you started saying about abstract thought, ability to organize, ability to create complex solutions creatively, and that kind of stuff. That's great background for lots of things. And in fact, I think the same John Haydock used to say, you know, you can go on and do anything after you go to architecture school. It's sort of a framework for creating a reality. And,
And I think that's actually, I think there's true merit to that, and that doesn't bother me. The thing which I see to be slipping away from many institutions is that the curtain is not lifted up. In other words, there's a whole world behind, you know, after architecture school, that is in effect not taught because it's not known by the people who teach. And so they want to keep the playpen their own, and they want to have authority.
Well, what are the statistics about faculty members?
Well, you know, I couldn't find any.
Well, then how can you say that?
A lot of it is, I know that virtually every
No, but how can you say that?
Hold on, duo. Actually, Matt Arnold has done... You know Matt.
Oh, no. No.
You know
Get him
Matt.
On the phone, NCIRB.
Yes, no, yeah. No. Matt Arnold, who is a fellow alum of Jake and myself from Cooper Union, has researched how many faculty are actually architects in schools of architecture, and it's a very low percentage.
Well, it depends on how many adjuncts you have. I would submit that
probably the adjuncts are all licensed.
Yes,
and the full professors are maybe not.
No, they'd probably be be licensed, but probably maybe not practicing that much. But it depends. It really depends on the place.
I also think there's an enormous
paradigm. That's why I wonder about the statistics.
There's an enormous paradigm shift that I was talking with a former dean at Yale over lunch. He was sitting at the next table. I won't mention his name because it was held in confidence and he didn't want me to repeat it, but it's a very famous architect out of Chicago. You can do the math. He basically said that he thought that the trend of all of architectural education was not only the killing of the B.Arch degree, but the mandatory vectoring in future generations to getting a Ph.D. in architecture. As a professional degree.
Okay, so wait.
But was it recently?
Wait, duo. Was Stanley ever dean at Yale?
Wasn't Stanley.
Stanley?
Tom Beebe.
No,
it must have been Tom.
What?
Yeah. Okay, right.
My phone just disconnected, but anyway.
Yeah. See,
what he was saying.
Well, the
was,
PhD it's a theory degree, and there is no unified theory of architecture.
When
so
was
therefore,
this?
Well, you got it.
So when did you sit down?
Wait. So therefore,
an important point.
The MArch really is the terminal degree.
Curtis, can I just...
Duo just said yeah.
Time out?
Okay.
How long ago was this duo?
About 6 months ago.
Oh, okay. That's different.
I heard this before, but
I thought it went away.
Well,
the accreditation
thing. Here's what this unnamed dean, former dean, said.
Yeah.
He thought, truthfully, that what he saw confirmed, and he was up at Yale to give juries and do a section and all the rest of it. What he thinks is that the trend is, as any profession becomes inside baseball, it ends up that you have an educational class which protects itself, which rewards itself, which venerates itself, and makes for future classes of educators
sure.
the sort of job security which then is
self-perpetuating. Yeah.
And you then have this larger economic model of 7 years of going to school to get a PhD as opposed to 5 years to get a B.Arch. And it becomes quite diabolical.
But wait, you can't have it both ways. If you want to say it takes 7 years and then complain about the fact that
you can't get
not
a job.
That they don't teach enough in school.
Well, I don't think it's enough. I think actually, and in truth, I don't think what's missing is all that great in terms of time. I think it is the students that I see are universally, talented. They're universally eager. They universally have a deep but really ignorant commitment to being an architect. What they don't have a clue about is what any office in the world is like, what any set of working drawings is like. They've never actually had to think about building anything except occasionally in a playpen of a thing like they have the Yale Building Project here where they hammer nails into the house.
Yes.
I would submit that that's more a product of a master's education than a
I'm
going to infuriate a lot of people, but I just don't see how you can learn in 3 years what you learn in 5 years. Okay,
I agree with you.
I'm sorry.
Well, I just don't know. Wait, it gets better. A few weeks ago, I had a conversation with a guy who has a PhD from MIT in the philosophy of architecture. And because he has spent so much time and so much effort in acquiring degrees, at the culmination of his PhD in architectural philosophy, he believes that he is an architect. So,
well, you're not going to argue with a philosopher.
Yes, but no. And if you go,
you don't want to go there.
If you go online and you look at the TED lectures, the TED lectures.
Yes.
This guy introduces himself as an architect, and at great length, I questioned him right here in this studio about licensure And he insisted that he was an architect, and it really didn't matter that...
I heard about this. Jack told me about this before.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Duell know about this?
No, I don't think...
Keep going, then. And the listeners do not know.
Some of the listeners know, some don't. And he insisted that licensure laws didn't apply to him because he had a PhD, and he had an absolute moral right to call himself an architect because he has a PhD, and he has an absolute moral right, even legal right, to seek architectural commissions because he has a PhD.
Yeah, and that's where it's trending.
Yeah.
That's where it's trending. And the truth is that what ends up happening is if you look at the broader picture, you have this reciprocal inversion where internship...
I like that, reciprocal inversion. The academics...
Sounds like an architect speak.
No, it's great. No. Let me distill that for our listeners. What that means, I believe, Duo, and I love that, which is that because you've studied some more, you don't need to take the architect's registration exam.
Got it.
Because you know it all. I know it all. I don't need to take a test.
But I don't think anyone would ever agree with that legally.
It's true, but I think I actually think it's darker than that. I think what it says is that education is more valid than experience. It says that the abstract is more valuable.
Yeah, but
he's saying it's more valuable than actually knowing building.
All right, Jack, I think it's time for us to take five. burning down the house. We're talking about education of an architect, social contract. I'm Curtis B. Wayne here on the 29th of January, talking with Duo Dickinson and Jake Allspector. And we were in the throes of, does more education make a better architect? And I think the consensus was no, up to a point. Duo?
Let me give you one quick anecdote.
The please.
Gentleman works in my office. He's in his mid-40s. In his 30s, working in Boston. And he went to the BAC and got his BArch degree. And in the office came a brand new spanking master's degree, young employee from Harvard. And their job was to go out and see what was going on with a big roof and a big building to see how it was failing. They go out there and they begin to actually sort of deal with the roof, measure it, look at it, photograph it. And the young intern architect turns to him and says, well, why are we doing this? Don't we have people that do this for us? Don't we have people that do this? And he just struck my employee that his mind was just coming from a very, very different place.
Yes, we have people who do that.
By the way, he was taught.
Yes, they're called architects, and they observe, and they have a background, and they think about why the hell this is happening.
Yeah,
I mean, if we don't do it, who does it? I mentioned Stanley Tigerman previously because he's put it out there in terms of the brave new world of sustainability. If we don't do it, who's going to do it? Well, that's an easy question because the answer is nobody's going to do it if we architects don't do it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk in our culture about the 99% and the 1%. And I do think that what architects are trending towards is extreme relevance to 1% of the population and an extreme irrelevance to 99%. But I think a lot of that has to do with the way that the essential values of the profession are communicated to the world, that our values are based in buildings that are so unique and so untouchable and so without context and cost and even anything but an elaborate fig leaf of sustainability applied to them, that they are really untouchable paradigms, and you wouldn't even think of hiring one because they're just too good for you. And
are you talking about residential architecture?
I'm talking really about everything when you think about it. The truth is, when you think about it,
I don't know if I agree with you. Listen, I think
how many people do you think
is institutional, educational,
right,
housing, and things that are really not for the 1% in the end, even though the 1% is in charge and benefits from that development. I don't my sense is it's not there. I think, you know, there's a lot of the image of the architect is the one who goes and
The image of the architect is the unassailable,
and there are
white shoe warrior who does the right thing.
But what do the mass of architects do? I think that they're working on very, you know, large scale,
I suppose,
projects, medium and large scale projects.
Well, here's the problem, Jake. Yeah. I think the mass of architects work on one family residences, whether they're one offs or mass produced. But I think that a small number of architects work on very large projects.
Yeah, I don't really know, but most of the architects that get trained and get employed,
in urban centers, are
working on large projects.
Let us consider the stats from the AIA.
I mean, there's a lot of small stuff, too. Don't get me wrong.
Yes, that says that most of the practitioners are sole practitioners.
If you take the top 100 firms...
Is that not right, Duo?
Well, you're both right. The truth is that of all the numbers of firms, the vast majority of firms are small practice firms. But a majority of architects work in large firms of humans.
Correct.
But let me take this to one level, though, because I really do want to press my point. I think that, and I'm not talking about right this minute, because, you know, there are people of a certain age that are extremely competent and are absolutely, you know, in the mix and creating great buildings and working hard and being relevant to a lot of people. But if the educational system keeps presenting people that are clueless about what it takes to make a building, over time,
the
authority
agree.
Of the architect goes away, and the authority of the engineer gets greater and greater and greater to determine what
a building
is. I totally
agree, but I don't think it's going to happen. It may seem like it's happening, but you know, intern development is a really important part of an architect's education. In this country, an architect must intern for a period of 2 or 3 years, depending on the level of educational degree, and that is an experience thing. Under the apprenticeship of a licensed architect, they cannot become licensed without having gone through that process.
Yes, but increasingly there is the notion from the academics, going back to the first part, that if you have all this education, you can be a quote architect. Well, wait, and you can compete for all of the peripheral funded projects.
No.
I mean, because traditionally architects did landscape architecture and urban design. Neither of which is within the purview of building buildings. Now, the landscape architects would have us know that we shouldn't be doing landscape architecture, and we have deferred to them, and we give them all due credence to their superior knowledge of flora and geology and all that. But they have also taken over urban design, because the urban design direction has been in terms of integrating landscape with architecture, with the built environment. The built environment is now become landscape and buildings. And I think we as architects are fine with that, as they have taken over urban design, because there is no professional licensure for urban design.
Well, you know, it's sort of the same question as
the mass. But then on the other hand, if architects are just building decorators and the engineers are professionally accredited by the social contract, then what does that leave us with? Just architectural decoration. And, you know, the master builder is an architect who knows both structure and design, and in older times also some landscape.
Right,
now we've ceded landscape to the landscape architects, and I have,
exactly, because and the I hold, world is more complicated, Curtis,
and I,
we need these
yes,
sub-disciplines,
and I
just
hold
like
no,
there is in every other endeavor.
And I hold no grudge against them, and I hold no grudge against the engineers. But this goes, Jake, you and I have talked about this back in 1867.
Sure, sure.
Viollet-le-Duc.
Right.
You know, went to the Empress Eugenie and said, the French Academy wants to separate the architects as decorators of buildings from the engineers who make it happen. And he said, no, that cannot happen. And he prevailed. And it comes around in every generation. And what I feel, Duo and Jake, is that, again, we're in another one of these sort of peristaltic motions of movement.
Well, I have a larger critique.
You are exactly where I'm coming from in this. I look at doctors and lawyers. I look at them. And I look at a building in New Haven, which was built as a house, then taken over by the Yale Medical Association, a group of doctors that were the best doctors at Yale to have a social club. That entity has died in the last 10 years, and it has died because there's no such thing as a medical association. There are associations of neurosurgeons, association of pulmonary doctors. Everything is fractured into these very specialized components. The same thing has happened in law.
But there are people who go around and say, I'm a PhD architect aesthetician, and claim to have that part. And, you know, in a certain sense, they're right. There's really like this continuous spectrum of, as you know, of practitioners and what they like to do. And it would be nice if everyone, you know, was a master. But the fact is, there aren't that many, you know, people who really have lived long enough and practiced long enough and kept at it long enough to master it. And
to be master builders.
We know who they are.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but can I just inject one thing? Yeah.
Sure.
That the truth is that if you seed the master builder, if you seed that potential away in academia, if you say that is an impossible goal and that all we are the decorating aesthetes of buildings, that basically acknowledges the impossibility for the level of coordination between trades, sciences, social, and monetary things that make great buildings happen.
I don't think it necessarily
does. It needs the ability to make a building transformative. It makes it into a building, becomes simply a problem-solving exercise that doesn't combine all those trades in a way to transform the building.
Duo, I'm like someone who's practiced intensely for a long time and taught a lot. And the way I look at it is there's a lot to learn, and you have to learn it by doing, okay? But you also have to have the right education. And it's a balance. It really is. If you're too much one way or too much the other way, you're not going to come out of there understanding the full kind of balance of this, you know, the profession. You may still become a specialist, and likely you will, but someone's got to put it all together, or there has to be a mechanism for, you know, controlling it all. And someone does, and I don't want to rhetorically separate, you know, the stamping of the drawing certification to the state that someone who's really licensed understands and looks at the drawings and takes responsibility for it. That's a legal matter, actually.
Yes, it is. And I just want to insert a few things before we take the next break. Either we have a discipline, or we just have, I'm going back to the social contract, thread. Either we have a discipline, or we have infantile naturalism where everything goes. Architectural education is either an architectural appreciation degree, like an art history degree, or it is a professional degree where upon attaining that, you are qualified to start to practice. Now, the problem is that our civil government is not our friend because they allow people to call themselves architects, and they don't do anything about it. Jack, could you roll the next thing?
So sue them, man.
Where are our regulators when people say they're architects and they're not?
Well, it's interesting. In New Jersey, they hunt them down like dogs and really do prosecute them when people say that you're an architect and you're not. In Connecticut, they kind of wag their fingers at you, and New York is somewhere in between. So in the tri-state area, it's kind of an interesting melange.
I got to tell you, in New York,
When you say they, you're talking about people who...
Like the State Board of Architects.
The Registration Board. Yeah.
Well, it's one thing to, you know, to stand around and say you're an architect. You know, what's his name? George Costanza did too, but he didn't get that. You know, I mean... But, and so there's that extreme to the extreme of actually representing and getting paid to
Correct.
Do architecture and to file drawings and to make a building.
Yeah, well, when it comes down to it.
And if you do that, it really is a serious offense. Well, but I would say people who don't have degrees.
Let me give you one quick anecdote.
And who have staff members with licenses.
I was in a wetlands hearing last week in a little town. And they said, they looked at me and said, Duo, you don't have the letters AIA after your name. Are you not an architect? Mm-hmm. I said, well, actually, I chose not to put the, actually, I'm a member. They said, well, then why don't you have your name there? Because I just don't do it. He said, well, why? I said, well, I'm also like a member of the Lions Club. What's the difference? and they were shocked. They were really quite shocked to know that licensure has nothing to do with the AIA, mostly because the AIA doesn't want the public to know that. And everything gets very murky when it comes down to what a licensed architect is, except when it's time, as you mentioned, to get sued. And the truth is that unless we're training
people to file drawings,
to take responsibility,
but I'm sorry, to get a building permit, you need to have a licensed architect. That's
or an engineer.
No,
or an engineer.
Not true.
Well, it depends.
It depends on the size of the project. An engineer cannot stamp a building more than a certain size and a certain degree of, varies in different states.
You mean in Connecticut, an engineer can stamp for a house?
I think they can do that in New York.
Yeah, anything.
But I think anything more complex than that, the building department would.
Well, anyway, here's the thing. I am concerned that. Being
Sorry to
an
put a damper on that. I mean.
it's fine. You know, I'm concerned that being a licensed architect has become, in some people's minds, somewhat arcane. It's as if we were saying that you should have a license to be a phrenologist. You know about phrenology, Jake?
You betcha.
Duo does.
Yeah.
Heads up.
Yeah.
It's the measure of skulls.
It means that you can feel someone's skull and say, oh, you're very good in philosophy, but not so good in math. This is a 19th century thing that came from Orson Fowler, and he was very influential. In the 19th century, back in the 1800s, now we're in the 2000s.
Kind of murked up eugenics, by the way.
Let's not get into eugenics.
And then we'll be,
you know, like suppressing gypsies and things like that.
Exactly.
Right. Well, let's not get into fascism just yet. Thank you. But that suggests that architecture is like phrenology, and you shouldn't have a license because it's sort of, here at 2012, irrelevant to have a license to practice architecture because architecture doesn't really mean anything other than, you know, you have an education and you have a notion.
Anybody who's doing a serious or complex series of buildings in an urban area is going to have an architect and a license.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes, but there are certain people who
there still is
hold
an
themselves
architect.
Out as
I know,
architects.
I know.
And they
Philip Johnson was famous for not having a license
forever.
Until,
he
after
took
he
it nine
completed
times,
about, you know, 20 times. Buildings.
Wow.
And I tell you, nobody sued him, but he's an exception, and there are abuses. But I think,
and in the end, Philip Johnson was really
and partners
just
and associates who knew what they were doing and made sure he didn't get into trouble.
And in the end, there are two things: one, Philip Johnson really was just a provocateur, and that was valuable because he irked people and made them have to rise to their higher self. But two, he was a was a decorator. He was riffing off everybody else.
So are a lot of architects with a license.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
But in the end,
it isn't all that hard to get a license.
But in the end,
by the way, you have to be a good test taker. You don't have to be creative. You don't have to have an ethical conscience. You have to be a good test taker.
No, I mean, in the end, if you could get a PhD,
to the exam. All right.
You could get a license. I mean, really. I mean, it's just a matter of taking a test.
The one thing, as the time is running out, I would like to posit to both of you is, because I think it has the added benefit of being true, I mean, no matter how we slice it, this is a change time. I think no matter how we slice it, because of the way technology has changed the way we render and calculate and figure out buildings, and the fact that there are death by a thousand cuts in terms of leads and in terms of interior decoration and in terms of landscape architecture and in terms of all these multiplying trades that are essentially
specializations,
for good or for ill, you know, dissipating the role of the architect into a coordinator at best. The way we all three practice architecture right now will have ceased to exist in 30 or 40 years. It'll be changed into something else, and I just hope that it has that same power and gravitas and openness that really made it the mother of the arts for the last couple thousand years.
Well, I don't know how you practice, Duo. I haven't been out there to Madison.
I'm not sure I agree with you, Duo.
I hope to get out there.
It's going
to
be interesting, but I don't think so.
I'm not going to be driving. You'll have to pick me up at the train station because
It goes right to downtown Madison. You can walk to my office in 1 minute.
Okay, good. Because I have eschewed...
He's green, man. He's green.
I have eschewed automobiles for reasons that I have conveyed to you, but we may not get into. I'd rather have somebody else try for me. But, all right. I think that, and here's a really good culmination on which I think we all can agree. If architects don't make the right choices for the future composition of buildings going forward in terms of energy consumption choices, material choices, VOC.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff is actually becoming legal, which
is
how architecture works.
Well,
after we find that something's really profoundly needs to happen.
Yes.
If we don't do it, we make sure.
The engineers are not going to do that, or else there will be a new realm of engineers who are VOC engineers.
Got it.
Could very well be.
I mean, if we're not...
But we
architects are trained to be generals.
That's right. We put it all together.
Yes, we put it all together.
And that is
our strength. You could have 6 degrees in architecture and not have the practical experience to know what things need to go together to make a healthy and wholesome and energy efficient.
And beautiful, man.
And beautiful.
And wonderful to be in.
Contribution to the built environment. And that is what we architects need to be focused on, that we are the generals of the built environment. We are not specialists. We are the generals. We are not the foot soldiers. We are the form makers and the deciders.
The general.
We have to have authority, and that means we have to have gravitas, and actually the reality of how of our knowledge has to be self-evident versus simply pompously asserted.
Exactly. We have to demonstrate that we actually know
what the hell we're talking about.
Yes. Let us go forth and do that. Jack, roll it. So, in the end, let us summarize. We are the generalists, we know what we're doing, and we're going to do the right thing by all of the people.
Amen, brother.
Here we go.
Thank you for listening. This is Burning Down the House.
Go for it.
Keep the faith, keep listening.
schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.